Whether you're driving to work, cycling to a friend's place, or on the way to your next holiday, Amazon Music has your news fix covered. As an Amazon Prime member, you have access to ad-free top podcasts. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.co.uk/onthegonews. That's amazon.co.uk/onthegonews. And listen to your favourite podcasts on the go.
Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. In today's episode, we discuss the pros and cons of Messi's magical run in Major League Soccer, as well as catching listeners up on what we've been up to. It's been a while, and we also talk a little bit about Welcome to Wrexham Season 2. My name is Christopher Harris. I am joined by Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, what have you been up to these last, I think it's been about 2.5 weeks, maybe 3 weeks since last episode. I know you've been busy, I've been busy, but what have you been up to lately?
Yeah, so I've been kind of all over the place. I was up your way for several days, but you weren't there, when you're going to talk about that with the listeners in a minute or two. Ended up doing media ops at a cricket tournament, which was kind of interesting. And it reminded me once again that there's a whole segment of people from the UK, but from England in particular, from England and from the West Indies, who view soccer, football, as their second sport or third sport, and they prefer cricket, which is something I often forget, being so in the kind of soccer vortex. Published a book about Florida and the American Revolution. And unlike the book I published earlier this year, which was kind of just an overview, skimming through a topic of about 200 years of colonial Florida prior to the American Revolution, this is a very detailed book, which I think is probably the most comprehensive book that at least I know of that's been written about what happened in the American Revolution in what is now the state of Florida, much of which happened in your area, hence why I was up there in St. Augustine, Jacksonville, and what is now Nassau County, Fernandina, Yulee area.
Yeah, definitely. So I've had a chance to listen, to actually read a portion of the book so far, but maybe towards the end of the episode, Kartik, we'll talk about that in more detail as far as what it's called and where people can find it. But like you said, too, I was away. I took a week off and went to Wrexham. Went there on assignment and did some stories for World Soccer Talk and did some interviews. Some of that's been published already on worldsoccertalk.com. But I'll have some more probably details coming out this week, maybe a podcast episode talking about Welcome to Wrexham Season 2 that's coming up on September 12th. It's coming out, the actual premiere on FX. But I mean, there's so much to talk about as far as kind of some of the things I saw there or kind of experienced just being there for a week. The thing that for me is so different that I really love doing when I do go there, which is not that often, but when I do go to the UK, is I love going to motorway service stations, which is basically rest stops or rest areas on the American equivalent on major highways. And the reason I love going to motorway service stations is, you pull off the road, you want to take a break, you get some breakfast or get some to drink or eat or just take a break from the road, is on a Saturday going to a service station. And the one I stopped at was, I think, between Oxford and Birmingham in England, so kind of close to central England. But what happens is you've got people from around the country going all sorts of different directions. Some are going to the south, some are going to the north. And at a motorway service station, you pull in on a Saturday morning or a Saturday early afternoon. And there were so many fans from around the country. So I saw Liverpool fans, I saw Wolves fans, Brighton fans. I mean, you name it. You see a ton of families wearing the scarves, the shirts, and they're all going different places. They're all going to different games. And one conversation I had with a couple of Brighton supporters, just talking, like, and they were talking about, I was saying, like, you guys right now to me are the blueprint for Premier League clubs in terms of how well the club is run. How great the fan base is, the smart decisions they're making in the transfer market, but most importantly, like how well they're playing on the pitch. And just having those conversations at, completely at random with fans from across the country. And I was thinking to myself, like, you can't get that in the US. I mean, the US obviously is so big, so spread out, but it's not as if you can pull into a rest stop or a rest area or a service plaza and have a conversation or have many conversations with soccer fans at random. What about you, Kartik? Have you had similar experiences at motorway service stations in England or Great Britain?
Yeah, and it's also something I've experienced in train stations in England in terms of being able to talk to other football fans, talk about their local clubs, talk about Chesterfield, talk about Scunthorpe, talk about their local communities and what their football clubs mean to them. And by the way, if you haven't been to a motorway service plaza, it is amazing. It blows away the service plazas on the Florida Turnpike or the Ohio Turnpike, blows them away. Costa Coffee, I think, is superior to Starbucks. So that's another plus of those motorway service stations. It's also something I understand is very commonplace at rest areas and service stations in Germany and in Italy. I haven't actually experienced that myself, but that you run into other fans, etc. Kind of similar, quite frankly, if you go through the Atlanta airport or O'Hare or Dallas, DFW, on a college football, on a Friday before a college football Saturday, you see everybody in their team colors, and it's really kind of a neat thing, even if you don't like American college sports that much. This is similar when you stop at motorway rest areas.
Yeah, so for any listeners who are thinking about taking a trip to the UK to go see some matches or to go there on vacation or whatever, if you do get a chance, if you're there on a Saturday, just stop by a random service station and you're almost guaranteed to have conversations with fans. It's really eye-opening and something quite different, right? Because the country's not as big, not nearly as big as the US, and that's something you're able to do. So from personal experience, Kartik, I thought this was really interesting because I think this is the main topic for the show this week, and that is talking about the Messi effect. I really find it fascinating for many different reasons, but being in Wrexham for a week and being on assignment to report on Wrexham firsthand for World Soccer Talk, I was able to really kind of like dive deep into what's happening within British culture and news and entertainment, and just talking to fans from around the UK. So being on the ground there for a week in England and Wales, it was interesting to see what impact Lionel Messi is having on the UK population. And the answer is this: there is no effect at all. I mean, this is partly because with the kickoff times of, usually 7:30 or 8 o'clock Eastern time in the US, those games are starting after midnight, sometimes after 1 o'clock in the morning, UK time, they don't end until the middle of the night. So the impact of Messi, the Messi effect, or Major League Soccer or MLS season pass in the UK, to me, is absolutely zero. I mean, there's zero discussion of what's going on or how he's helping Major League Soccer. There's nothing in the papers, nothing on television. So coming back from that trip to the UK, I kind of switched on Twitter, and that was everything that anyone was talking about was Messi. I mean, I was going through my Twitter timeline. I mean, everyone was talking about it. And it is just interesting in terms of being on the US shores and how all of the discussion is focused on Messi, almost 100% of it. So much so that I think in some ways it's a little bit over the top. I mean, yes, he's a fantastic player. It's an incredible story. He's doing so well. But I have to wonder, like, how has Messi changed Major League Soccer in a very short time? But before we get into that, Kartik, I know, you watch soccer from around the world. A lot of it is lower division soccer also. But what's been some of your observations maybe in the last month with the Messi effect? Have you experienced it firsthand at all?
A little bit. And it's a South Florida thing. When I talk to people and say, I tell people what I do for a living, it's like, oh, well, now that's big down here because of Messi, right? And irrespective of everything else. But I've noticed maybe we should cut it some slack because it hasn't had the mainstream penetration I had hoped it would, which is, again, I don't want to get too deep into it. Chris, and you took a beating on this, so I really don't want to get too deep into it. But why I thought MLS needed to really make an effort to sign Neymar, because I thought that that would augment Messi and help break through. But in fairness, the Women's World Cup was going on. That's what mainstream news covered. And then with the Rubiales situation after, I was shocked, Chris. A week after the World Cup ended, I turn on CNN for the news. And they lead with whatever, the political news is. But then 10 minutes into the newscast, it's okay, well, let's bring in Christine Brennan to talk about this situation with Spain and their women's team and their federation. And same thing when I watched CBS News on the nightly news, it came up. So that they were talking about soccer, but because the Women's World Cup was 4 weeks long and then had this kind of 2 week news cycle attached to it because of the Spain situation, I think that kind of hurt Messi breaking into the mainstream. Now, the Spain situation, though not resolved, I think is not as newsworthy anymore. Although you were in the UK for a week while the UK media was really fanning the flames of it, I think partly because England had lost to Spain in the final. But I feel like with a US Open Cup final coming up and Inter Miami headed to the MLS Cup playoffs, a big win over Kansas City last night, without Messi, without a number of internationals, actually. I think that maybe the mainstream media, they only have the capacity to cover one soccer story at a time, right? This isn't the NFL or one of their sports they're accustomed to covering and covering as news. I feel like it might still have its shelf life now that the Women's World Cup is over and the controversies over the Women's World Cup have begun to fade. Maybe that's an overly optimistic take, but yes, Chris, I would have to say to this point, outside of kind of the MLS bubble where it's been great, don't get me wrong, it's been fantastic. And then some local impacts here in South Florida, it has not had the effect I had hoped it would. But again, I stressed the Women's World Cup was going on, and that's probably the reason.
One of the measuring sticks that you and I use privately, Kartik, sometimes to gauge what the mainstream is really interested in, is how many television interviews requests we get. So in the last 12 months, you and I, actually the last 15 years, you and I have done many, many interviews with, whether it's, I don't know, Fox or CBC or BBC or you go down the list, like all the different kind of top broadcasters, beIN Sports, etc. And we've done many, many TV interviews, News Nation, Fox, Live Nation, all these different news channels. In the last 12 months, what were the two hottest stories that we kept on getting requests for to do TV interviews for in the last 12 months?
It was the Grant Wall passing and the Women's World Cup. And in fact, CBS radio station in San Francisco had me on twice toward the end of the Women's World Cup. And I actually asked the producer if they were going to be covering Messi. Just, kind of felt like I had to do my duty. And it was like, oh, yeah, maybe in the future. But it was basically a no, right? So, yeah, it's been those two stories. Grant, well, I guess Pelé also. Pelé's passing did generate some interest.
But it would have been like basically the number of requests we got would have been number one, Grant Wall, number two, Women's World Cup, and then number three was Pelé's death. And I did get one request about Messi, or actually maybe two requests about Messi. But I've been surprised because mainstream media, I mean, they basically in the interviews that we did with them, I really kind of had to educate them in terms of what was happening. And they're like, oh, wow, we didn't realize that. That's interesting in terms of, you mean kind of the that when Messi's going to all these stadiums, it's going to be sold out stadiums. Now, on a local level, so if you're in Chicago, if you're in New York, or you're in Miami, or you're in Houston, or whichever city it is, and if Messi's coming to town, that's a big story in that market. The big one recently was the LAFC Inter Miami game, and mostly because of, I mean, what an incredible game it was, but mostly because the celebrities came out to it. So that became a kind of a news angle. but we didn't get any interview requests about that. But I think that one is probably more of, it's making inroads more on social media than it is on traditional media. I think on social media kind of blew up in terms of Selena Gomez or Leonardo DiCaprio, or all the different stars that were at that game. So I think it is interesting that it hasn't had the impact in mainstream media as much in the US. It certainly is having a major impact in terms of ticket sales, MLS season pass subscriptions, merchandise, and then just people talk, just social media people talking about it. But it hasn't yet impacted that mainstream media. And I'm wondering what's going to have to happen for that to be. I mean, I think Kartik, just thinking about this right now, I think partly having all the games on streaming is probably holding back that breakthrough. Because, you know, I mean, if these games were on linear television, I think it would be easier for mainstream media to come across it, to watch it, and to realize how big of a story this actually is.
Right to that point, last night here in Messi's home market, if you turned on the television and you were looking for, and you had to cut through like 8 college football games going on at once, it's ridiculous. In fact, I noticed every single major network, CBS, NBC, Fox, and ABC were all showing college football games in prime time on national television. So that's, you know, you have to compete with that. But if you were trying to find a soccer match on television, it was a USL match that was on linear television locally. If you wanted to watch Messi, you had to sign into Apple TV. And a lot of it is conceptual, right? A lot of what we say is theoretical about, oh, well, it's much easier to find games when they're on television. You get more casuals watching. You have to be really motivated to seek it out on streaming. But then this was case in point for me. I decided, because of the television I was at, just to go ahead and watch the Miami FC game, which, yeah, I'm motivated to watch anyway. That's the team I support, against Detroit in USL, which was on a local Channel 33, rather than watching the turning on the Apple TV box and going through the rigmarole and watching Inter. So it does have an impact. There's no question about it.
Yeah, there's kind of a... It's tough, though, too, because Major League Soccer, I'm sure, probably thought to themselves, like, maybe if we put a couple of these games on television, maybe that'll give us more reach, more awareness. It'll get us more people kind of thinking, like, oh, wow, look what I'm missing. I could be watching this week in, week out on MLS Season Pass, only if I had MLS Season Pass. However, at the same time, Major League Soccer is trying to get as many subscriptions to MLS Season Pass because they're incentivized to do so. And we've seen the impact this week. There was a report in the Wall Street Journal using some data available through kind of a third-party analysis company. And it showed how many people were subscribing to MLS Season Pass based on their metrics in the US. And we saw in February and March when MLS Season Pass launched, there was definitely a spike. I mean, it's new people coming in or even regular fans, I mean, kind of legacy fans wanting to find out how to watch the games. And so they're subscribing in the beginning. And then from April, May, June, it flatlined. And that's something we had a podcast on a few months ago. And we talked about the plateau. It's just, I mean, nothing was happening. And at that time, we said, okay, the only thing that could actually make a difference here is either for next year changing the format completely and, you mean, getting rid of the playoffs or doing something drastic or signing Messi. And then July, Messi signed. And then we saw that, according to that research in the Wall Street Journal, that on the day that Lionel Messi played his first game for Inter Miami, available exclusively on MLS Season Pass, they had 110,000 subscribers in the US, which is fantastic. That's great numbers. And his second game too didn't have as many as that, but possibly maybe 40,000 or maybe 50,000 signups on those days. So it is interesting. I mean, there aren't that many games left in the season. I think in the regular season, Inter Miami has, I think, about 8 games left in the season. and then hopefully they make the playoffs, and then at that point, then some more of those games should be on television, at least to that mainstream market, that mainstream news, to actually make that happen, to make that kind of breakthrough to the next level. But so, Kazi, if we kind of think about the pros and cons of what is essentially at this point, is it's not MLS, it's not Major League Soccer, it's Messi League Soccer, because so much of the focus is on him that the rest of the league, and this would be a con, this is a con of Messi joining MLS, a con is that the rest of the league is practically insignificant. And I don't mean to, I mean, no disrespect, but so many people are signing up for MLS Season Pass, first of all, to watch Messi. They're not signing up to watch the whole league. They're not signing up to watch all those other teams. They're signing up to watch Messi. And I've run into random people in the last couple of weeks after coming back from Wrexham, you mean, just at random, and people saying like, oh, yeah, I subscribe to MLS Season Pass just to watch the Messi games. And so that is one, you mean, definitely a con of that is the feeling I'm getting. And you can see that from the reporting in terms of how many stories are being written or how much focus is there on the rest of the league or the rest of the teams or the rest of the players. And it's practically nothing. There's very little discussion about that. The hope is that, you mean, floating boats, you mean, kind of like raise it up for everyone. But I'm not so sure about that. What about you, Kartik? What are some of the pros and cons of Messi joining MLS that you've seen thus far that in your analysis and observations?
Similar to yours, and I would say one of the other cons from a perception standpoint is we have some incredible, and I think this is part of the reason why MLS is in the place it is in terms of competitiveness. You have the middle of the rosters in Major League Soccer that have been filled out by a lot of young players from South America in particular, but also some young players from Central America. You've seen better scouting in Africa than you used to see. Because what used to happen with MLS, quite frankly, and I don't want this to offend people, but they were signing a lot of guys from outside the United States who were brought to them by agents, and their scouting wasn't actually very good, and the middle of the rosters weren't built out the way they needed to be. So I think MLS is much more competitive now because they've got so many young players. They got multiple young players right now in the league that I think will be moved on and be very successful players in Europe. You just had the sale of a very good goalkeeper, one of the best goalkeepers in the league, to Chelsea, where he is going to be the number two as of now. So there are really good stories in MLS's integration into the global soccer market that are completely being ignored and lost. And in fact, I think the Messi thing, unfortunately, Chris, I hate this because it's not true. And this is a perception that MLS worked really hard to change. But this talk of, oh, well, you know, MLS is just a retirement league now, that started again. And I think the league had done a lot to push back on that. So that's really, to me, the biggest con. And maybe that's being in the soccer bubble and hearing the perceptions of MLS, which had evolved, change, revert back to where they were when Beckham signed or other points in time. And then I would say the other con, similar to you, is that there's less attention on other sides that are doing really, really well. This having been said, I think one major potential benefit is I've complained for years that, in my opinion, outside of the first few years of MLS with DC United, which I still think was arguably the best team in the history of the league, the Bruce Arena and early Thomas Rongan teams in DC from 96 to 99, and then possibly the Galaxy, again under Arena, there have been no super clubs in this league. I mean, even when San Jose/Houston were winning championships, they weren't particularly good in the regular season. They just do well in the playoffs every year. I think Inter Miami gives MLS the possibility of having a super club, and they have the right manager in Tata Martino. He's already having an impact, right? Even when Messi comes off the bench, like against Red Bull, or doesn't play, like against Sporting, you're seeing the Tata effect, right, with that team. I think this is one potential positive, and we won't know this for a couple of years, but maybe MLS now has that super club that they've lacked through the years. And I know they talk about parity. I know they talk about competitiveness. I know they talk about, oh, you know, every game matters and there's this competition that you don't get in other leagues. All of that is just fluffy rhetoric, which is meaningless. You need super clubs. You need something to hitch casual fans. You need a club for people in other cities to hate. Admire begrudgingly, but hate, and maybe Inter Miami is that club.
So let me ask you this, though, Carter, because I was going to mention that was going to be one of my cons, is that Inter Miami is undefeated since Messi's joined the club. Has won all of its games that it needed to in the League's Cup to progress, and some of them go into penalty kicks in order to win it, to win the title. They're in the US Open Cup final. They're in the league. They're undefeated. The only team that has come close to really, basically causing an upset has been Nashville.
Twice, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Nashville, to me, it's a lot of it comes down to the coaching in terms of tactically the way that they're set up. I mean, some good players too, definitely, no doubt. But in terms of the way that the coach is actually setting this team up to be really well organized. So, but going back to the super club thing, in the DC United years when they were the super club in Major League Soccer, in its early years of MLS, I mean, what was their records like? They had to have lost games, right? It wasn't like they were undefeated or winning every game. At this point, it doesn't seem to be any team that's going to be able to stop Inter Miami at this point.
Yeah, so the first season, Tampa Bay was actually better than DC, and DC got better as the season went on and then beat the Rowdies. What were they called? The Mutiny, thank you, which was a stupid name. They should have been called the Rowdies. They beat the Mutiny in the playoffs, but then 97-98, they were really good. 98, they don't win MLS Cup, but they win the Inter-America Cup. They win CONCACAF Cup. They beat Vasco da Gama in the Inter-America Cup. 99. They were the best team of the league. But there were losses in there. I do remember specifically a match where they went to the Meadowlands and Metro Stars put three or four goals up against them. So they weren't winning every game. That is a good point. They had, I think in 98 in particular, which was a year they didn't win the MLS Cup of those 4 years, they did have a ridiculous points total. And then actually I should say the same thing about 2005 to 2007 DC United, even though I think 2004 to 2007, even though I think they only won the MLS Cup once in that period. There was 1 year, and this is the disadvantage of the playoffs, and I'm going to say this, preface this by saying, hey, if you're listening, our good friend Taylor Twellman, don't get angry. DC United were so much better than New England that year, and they were like 20 points ahead of them, right, in the regular season at one point. But because the MLS system is designed the way it is, in the playoffs, DC lost and New England ended up winning the Eastern Conference because of the design of MLS. So this is the thing we have to remember, Chris. Even when teams are unbeatable in the regular season in MLS, oftentimes they get tripped up because of the playoff system. So that could still happen to Inter Miami, even though they're winning everything right now. Even though they have two draws, right? The penalties against the match they won on Pens against Dallas, and then the league match against Nashville. Yeah, this could happen in the playoffs, because now that we're talking about DC United, there was one DC United team that ran away, were far and away the best team in the league under Peter Novak, and they were so far ahead in mid-July that they had nothing to play for 3 months, and then look what happened in the playoffs. So yeah, That's a problem with MLS.
That's true. And it is one of the things that, I mean, they've won League's Cup already. They're in the final of the US Open Cup. We'll play Houston. And then, they still have to make the playoffs. The way things are going, they will make the playoffs, so they keep on winning.
Yeah.
And I could see them going all the way. I mean, yes, in terms of the way the system is set up. And actually, I think in the playoffs, it's the best of three. So in the early rounds, so there's a good opportunity. It's not like kind of a knockout round, a single game elimination. So even if they do slip up and tie a game or lose a game, there's the opportunity for them to still progress through to the
next round.
This
almost happened, now that I think about this, in 2007, the year Beckham signed, but also Cuauhtemoc Blanco significantly signed for Chicago. And they were terrible when they signed him. They were one of the worst teams in the league. And remember, they started winning once Blanco came in, For those of you who were following MLS at the time, and then they made the playoffs, and then I think in the first round of the playoffs they knocked out DC United, who would have the best record in the league, and then I think may have gotten unlucky in the Eastern Conference Finals against New England, if I remember. I have to refresh my memory, but that was a similar situation where there was this elite foreign player that got signed in the middle of the season. Blanco is not Messi. I'm not pretending he is, although Blanco had a kind of a big effect on crowds, if you remember, because yeah, he was one of the biggest Mexican stars, and we know how that drives audiences in the U.S. And all of a sudden, Chicago, who had been a joke of a team at that point in the season, became the team to beat. So this is a you know what? It happened with Seattle when why am I blanking on his name? Uruguayan player signed in the middle of the season. Oh my god. I'm getting old. Chris, help me out. Your Uruguayan star for Seattle.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I
2016, 2015, 2016. Nicholas Lodero.
Okay.
When he signed. Yeah. Seattle were terrible, actually, in the league at that point. They go on a tear, they win MLS Cup. So it's happened before.
Yeah, I mean, so the pros definitely is that MLS is making a shed load of money from ticket sales, MLS season pass signups, merchandise, and sponsorships, right? I'm sure in terms of all those ad breaks that we get watching MLS season pass, that they're, I mean, those companies are paying top dollar, as well as other deals that have been done, shirt sponsorships deals, I mean, you name it. I do worry about some of those other clubs in MLS, though. I mean, if fans are watching these games with Inter Miami, seeing how good they are, how entertaining these matches are, and then, I mean, whether it's LA Galaxy fans or, I don't know, Colorado fans, Toronto fans kind of watching their product and going like, okay, how is our team so bad in this league, or so underperforming compared to kind of Inter Miami, which was the worst team in the league? What I do hope happens is that the league owners start spending some more money, or the league starts spending some more money on some big time players too, because I mean they can create some other super clubs in this league. Neymar, I thought was a bad move to even try to get him. Thankfully, he went to Saudi Arabia Pro League and he'll retire there, and I'm sure, and that's it. But I'm sure there's other players out there too that they can bring in that would be star players. I mean, there's no one that's going to be the same as Messi, but at least there's some others out there that could move the needle.
But even consider me as a test here. So several weeks ago on the podcast, I admitted, for my own personal reasons, because of what they did with the stadium and how they haven't honored the legacy, etc., I hadn't watched Inter Miami ever play a match, with the exception of the two times they played the club I support, Miami FC, a USL club, in the US Open Cup. Now, suddenly, even on this podcast, I'm rattling off results to you, what happened in the matches, what happened at the end of the game against Red Bull, what happened in the Dallas game in the League Cup. Suddenly, I'm watching that team, and I'm not really watching the rest of MLS. So, even with me, it's happened.
It's funny too. Even with me, it's happened too. So I've been a big fan of MLS 360. I mean, since it began, I've been watching it almost every Saturday night. Last weekend, Inter Miami played on Sunday against LAFC. So Saturday night, I was like, I mean, should I even bother watching MLS 360? And I watched it for a little bit, maybe like maybe 20 minutes. I'm like, this is so boring. I mean, it's just nothing going on. It's just like, it's just not the same. So yeah, but that's the big, I think that's the biggest pro of all of these. So it's gotten people like us who normally would be watching, I mean, tons of lower division soccer or European soccer or soccer from South America around the world. And oftentimes by a Saturday night or a Sunday night, I mean, we're tired from watching a whole day's worth of soccer. And then maybe we're not watching the MLS games. We're watching USL or taking a break, watching a movie, whatever it may be. So it's gotten us to watch MLS season pass more, specifically Messi and Inter Miami. But the biggest pro of all this is that I believe it is creating more soccer fans in this country, that there are more people now all of a sudden. And it could be the parents of the young kids that are wearing the Messi shirts, or it could be just sports fans in general. They're like, hey, let me check out this Messi thing to see what the big deal is about. And when you do watch the games and you do see the level, this goes without saying, but in terms of the technical skill, the creative skill, just how good of a player Messi is on the field. I mean, you can't take your eyes off him in terms of what he's doing. It is so entertaining to watch him play the game. It's not just the free kicks. It's not just the goals he's scoring or the assists. But you can just watch him up and down the field in terms of just kind of with his back towards goal, those simple passes or those touches or his positioning on the field. We can go on for days about that. But I think that's the biggest thing is in the funnel, there's a lot more sports fans coming in that are like, hey, look, yeah, I'm getting into the soccer thing. I'm watching Messi play, or I subscribed to MLS Season Pass. And that 110,000 people that signed up on that first day of Messi's game, that was just US only. Now, I don't think there's a lot of people signing up overseas outside of the US to watch Messi, a lot of it because of time zone issues. And then in South America, I think there's a ton of people that are watching these games illegally through streaming. It's all over the place, easy to find if they want to find it. But I think in terms of the US, this is creating more soccer fans at the end of the day, which is fantastic news. And that's something I think we can all agree that we do definitely want.
Whether you're driving to work, cycling to a friend's place, or on the way to your next holiday, Amazon Music has your news fix covered. As an Amazon Prime member, you have access to ad-free top podcasts. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.co.uk/onthegonews. That's amazon.co.uk/onthegonews. And listen to your favorite podcasts on the go.
Kartik, anything else you'd like to share from this past couple of weeks? Anything else that's on top of your mind that you want to share or discuss?
Well, Postecoglou and Spurs are, but maybe that's saved for another podcast. But I just want to say, and maybe it's because I'm just so annoyed by the U.S. men's national team fandom and even a player like Matt Turner saying, I wasn't going to get a fair chance at Arsenal because there's some bias against American players. Postecoglou is Australian. There was so much skepticism about him as a manager, right? He had a glass ceiling he had to break through, which exists for American players and coaches, exists for Japanese players and coaches, Korean. I think those are those four nations I always kind of link together. Man, we could do a 45-minute podcast me explaining to you Spurs tactics and how incredibly refreshing it is to watch and kind of the overloads they're causing. I'm not saying they're going to win the league. I don't think they will, obviously. I think maybe they'll struggle to be in the top four. But there is a change in football coming. And for years as Americans, we've wanted our own distinct style of play, right? We wanted a manager or a style that was distinctly American. I think, and maybe it's just because he happens to be Australian, but I'm seeing in Postecoglou's style something an export from Australia that's like, okay, imposing a style of play and something really entertaining and something really effective on the world of football. So, that's a conversation for another podcast. But I could go on for 45 minutes about Spurs and the overloads and how he's using Madison, how he's using Sarr. This isn't the podcast for today.
Yeah, one of my cousins who is near the Wrexham area was just beaming about Tottenham Hotspur. He's always been a Spurs fan, and he was just over the moon in terms of just. I sat with him and watched the Bournemouth against Spurs match, and you could just tell by just looking into his face and seeing him smile so much how happy he is and how much of a relief this is to see a club that's actually playing forward thinking football rather than. Conte ball,
Mourinho,
Mourinho ball too. So, it's been a good season so far in the Premier League. I mean, I've been really impressed by Steve Cooper and the job he's doing at Nottingham Forest. Really, kind of elevating that club more and more into hopefully kind of a permanent stay there in the Premier League. The Man United against Arsenal game, what a game that was in terms of the ending of that. Just incredible scenes there at the end. But and then NBC, pretty much same old. The one thing that has changed is the studio set.
Yeah.
So that looks more modern. That looks better. That looks it looks like the same studio, but just actually a different kind of window dressing.
So, do you like the stand-ups?
I do. Yeah. So for listeners who may not know, usually they're always sitting at the desk talking back and forth. And now at halftime and post-match, you see that the three of them usually, if it's Tim Howard, Rebecca, and one of the two Robbies, standing up and discussing that. And I think that's good because it's different, right? What about you, Carter? You like it?
Yeah, it is different. Maybe eventually it'll become kind of the same old, because the content hasn't really changed. There's still stuff missing in terms of analysis, I feel like, in that show. Now, this having been said, I've now been kind of turned on to the Robbie, or what it's called, Two Robbies podcast, because it seems like the stuff, it may be that Earl and Musto are holding things back in the studio, or just the format doesn't lend itself to deep dive analysis, but they're actually quite good and quite analytical on that podcast. but it's stuff they don't give us in the NBC or USA studio, which frustrates me, but now I've had to augment their studio coverage with that podcast, which I recommend. I should have checked it out years ago, quite honestly, because they plug it every week on NBC soccer coverage, but I've started listening to it regularly now, and it's quite good.
Yeah, and being in the UK for a week and watching BBC Match of the Day, just see that deep dive analysis, I'm like, wow, this is something we're not getting with NBC Sports in the US. However, I mean, like BBC Match of the Day, it's at 10 o'clock or 10:25 UK time after a busy day of soccer. So they've had, hours and hours to prep to get that analysis done, to do the editing. And these are things that watching that show, I'm always learning things or seeing things that I wouldn't see otherwise if I was watching NBC Sports. So maybe it's one of those things that, they did have a Match of the Day program back in the day on NBC Sports. It was different. And maybe, I think with maybe cutbacks or just less programming now than they had before, but maybe there's room for an opportunity for like a Sunday show that goes into some of the deep dives, maybe picking up some of the things from the two Robbies, putting that into a show. Maybe that's something that NBC Sports should consider.
Yeah, and something I am concerned about, we've talked endlessly about the college football coverage and how it might impact soccer coverage. It is not affecting the match windows, as one of our listeners wrote in and told us. That is absolutely correct on NBC specifically, not getting into even CBS or Fox yet. But it does, I think, affect the post-game show. Already seeing that the last 2 weeks where there's a goal zone or whatever after, and it's just like it's rushed, and then there's a college football game on after. So that's something we're going to have to watch as the season goes on.
All right, listener mailbag. First up is Daniel, and Daniel has a question for both of us, Kartik. Daniel says, I know who Chris supports, but what about Kartik? Is it still Manchester City? And also, to both of you, if you could support multiple clubs, who are those clubs and why?
Yeah, it's still Manchester City, although I've had my qualms about the ownership. I've had my real dislike for them going into the Super League. That really probably impacted my fandom more than anything, to the point where the rest of that season, which was the season City won the league, I didn't care. Right, and they were in a Champions League final. I really didn't care. I still support them, but honestly, my sentiment and big part of me still supporting them is okay. If they don't win the league, it's going to be one of these other five big six teams, all of whom I dislike more. So I still support City. I still follow City, but I really also focus on a number of other clubs. QPR I watch now more regularly. I am a kind of long-term legacy Stockport County fan, and they're back in the Football League as of last year. They almost got promoted. Unfortunately, they didn't. They almost got promoted to League One. So I follow them. I follow their results every week, and whenever they're on ESPN Plus, watch them. So those would be other clubs. And honestly, sometimes it's just stories that captivate me. You mentioned Steve Cooper and Nottingham Forest. I'm watching them closely this year. And like I think everybody else who loves good football, we're watching Brighton really closely.
Yeah, definitely. And then for me, it's so I've gone to maybe four or five Bundesliga games, And when I've gone to Germany, I'm like, okay, all right, guys, just hear me out. I want to find a Bundesliga club that I connect with. And it hasn't happened yet. I've gone to the stadiums. I've watched a lot of the games. None of them Bayern Munich, by the way, or Borussia Dortmund, but some of the other Bundesliga teams. And I haven't found that team that really connects with me. Same thing with La Liga. For a long time, I was like, with La Liga, I'm like, okay, there's got to be a team that really speaks to me, that I feel like a connection with, that I can kind of support as a second team. My first team being Swansea City. I haven't found a La Liga team that connects with me either. So so I'm just right now a solo club supporter. I know looking on Twitter sometimes, like some of the people that do respond back to us, some of them have like about 10 different teams they support based on their hashtags in their bio. I'm like, wow. But yeah, for me, it's just still my boyhood club, Swansea City, since the 1970s.
So in Germany, I've gone through the same journey, and as our listeners know, I watch a lot of Bundesliga and I really feel connected to the league because of 50+1. Heidenheim, in its very early days, Heidenheim might be that club that finally speaks to me. Newly promoted Heidenheim. So let's see how the season plays out.
Yeah, for me, I think one of these days I'll have to get to a Hamburg game or a St. Pauli game. But those two clubs, I definitely feel an interest in. But still have not, I mean, again, I have to go to it, experience it, learn about it, and see if there is that connection. So we shall see. All right, moving on. Drew has a question for us, or actually a comment about MLS. And Drew says, as usual, the gaffer is on the money with his comments about Katie Witham. She's been crushing it consistently for years. Yeah, and she is really, really good. So one thing I did notice from her, from a couple of weeks ago, she was like, oh my gosh, there's like a sold out crowd, an amazing crowd. And I'm like looking in the stadium, there's like so many empty seats. Like, so sometimes she might overdo it a little bit, exaggerate a little bit. But for the most part, she's really, really good sideline reporter. To me, one of the best in the business. Leagues Cup. Brandon says, hi, I've got a question about if you know the origins of the Leagues Cup. Who came up with the idea? I ask because an ESPN reporter claims that the Leagues Cup was imposed on Mexican soccer. Thank you. Yeah, so this, as far as I know, Kartik, it definitely was a joint announcement by Liga MX and Major League Soccer. But if I had to make an educated guess in terms of who came up with this idea and who brought it to the group, this feels like a Soccer United marketing product from Major League Soccer that goes to Liga MX, the president, and say, hey, we've got a great idea for something radical here that's going to help you. It's going to help you generate more income. It's going to help you generate more fans in the US. And it's going to be a win-win for many different reasons. And that's my take on it. What's your feeling on this one, Kartik?
Yeah, exactly the same. That's my understanding.
Okay, Steve Chen wants to talk to us about the Bundesliga. Steve says, Bundesliga versus La Liga was an interesting discussion, but in the US, I think ESPN is likely to push La Liga over Bundesliga due to language, the number of Spanish speakers versus German speakers in the country. I love the Bundesliga, though. Chris says, based on Harry Kane signing with Bayern Munich and the large popularity of Dortmund in the US, I really think that the Bundesliga needs a better TV deal after the current deal is up and needs to leave ESPN in order to do so. This is where Warner Brothers Discovery could come into the picture, I think, for two reasons. Midweek, which frees up TNT and TBS to air Bundesliga matches. Secondly, Max needs sports in order to grow the number of subscribers, and the Bundesliga is the perfect property for that. If Warner Brothers Discovery isn't still cash strapped by the time the rights are up for bid, they should bid on the Bundesliga. In my view, I still think Warner Brothers Discovery is still. I mean, Discovery is a huge corporation. But there's been so many cutbacks, and I just don't see them piling on any cash for the Bundesliga, especially if Apple is in discussions.
Yeah, if Apple's in discussions, that changes the game. But the Bundesliga is the one package maybe you could acquire without a lot of cash, right? I mean, ESPN didn't pay much for it compared to. That's another thing, Bundesliga versus La Liga. They paid, exponentially more for La Liga rights per year. So if you break it down per year. So maybe it's a possibility. They do need content. But yes, Discovery, post-merger, they're really cash-strapped, as you mentioned.
Yeah, two more comments to go. First up is Greg, and this is in regards to the discussion about the critique of ESPN by one of our listeners who responded in the listener mailbag saying, like, hey, what's your deal with ESPN? Why do you love their coverage so much of the World Cup? Greg says, yeah, hard disagree about the critique of ESPN, or at least ESPN's general record. As Kartik and Chris note, their World Cup coverage was great. I'd also add that their Euro coverage was superb. Lately, it's fine. Alejandro Moreno is annoying, yes, but the main on-air talent for La Liga and Bundesliga is great. From Derek Ray, Ian Dark, Archie Rintut, Sid Lowe, and the other pitchside pundits for La Liga. I do agree that they could do much better with hyping Bundesliga on social media and even La Liga. Both of those leagues and ESPN need to look at ESPN and the Premier League for how to hype a league on social media. Kartik, it's been a few weeks since we did the last episode, which was focused on the Bundesliga and how ESPN really needs to just basically take the bull by its horns and really push the Bundesliga here. Because with Harry Kane joining, this is a huge opportunity. 3 weeks later, what's your thoughts? What have they done differently, if anything?
Nothing. And they have Leverkusen and Bayern this coming, we're taping this on a Sunday, so 6 days from now, a match between the top two clubs in the league. You got Harry Kane on one side, you got Xabi Alonso, very marketable manager, on the other side, doing wonderful things at Leverkusen, really changing Leverkusen. So this is an opportunity that matches on ESPN Plus, not on linear, unfortunately. And I know how difficult it is during college football season. We've talked about college football a couple times today for any of these games to show up on linear. But this is an opportunity. Let's see what they do the next week.
Yeah, it's I wonder, though, if ESPN thinks, OK, they're not going to renew these rights, or they're going to lose them anyway. And so why bother investing, trying to make it bigger in the U.S.? If that's part of it, or if the other part of it is just basically is that they don't have the finger on the pulse, that they're so focused on La Liga, that they're so focused on trying to recoup some of the money, massive amounts of money that they paid for it, that they still feel that they have to continue pushing that big time, and with limited results, it appears to be. So yeah, it's really disappointing, I think, from the Bundesliga, from ESPN's perspective, that they aren't taking advantage of this opportunity. Just yesterday, I was at a local soccer store, to buy different kits and things like that. And there's a couple of kids in there talking about that they were Harry Kane fans, that they were actually Spurs supporters, but Harry Kane was their idol. That was their hero. And I'm sure those kids would probably... I don't know. I mean, will they be watching now Harry Kane in the Bundesliga, watching him is every game? In the Champions League, yes, I'm sure. But when it comes to, if Spurs is playing at the same time as Bayern Munich, which one do they go for? And it's probably Spurs. Spurs is the bigger attachment, the club versus player. But really disappointing from ESPN here that they haven't done anything, as far as I can tell. Last but not least, we have a question from Robert. And Robert says, it is generally believed that 75% to 85% of the explanation for sporting results is about the money you put into the first team squad. If this is true, how do you explain Chelsea's and Man United's money spent versus the results? And I think a lot of this comes down to Soccernomics, the really kind of popular, famous book that was published many years ago about... the clubs that do the best in the different leagues spend the most money on players. And I think for Chelsea and Man United, honestly, I don't have any sympathy for Todd Boehly and the money he has spent or really wasted. But generally, clubs don't spend as badly as Chelsea has done. So I think in many ways, to me, that's an outlier. You have somebody that's spending just... enormous, over £1 billion in money to buy all these players that it's almost as like he's watching YouTube highlight clips and buying it based on that, and you have a dysfunctional team that's not really working together, you're still missing a star striker. I mean, you have all of these excess players, and just, I mean, just a probably a case study for how not to run a football club. So Chelsea, I think, is the outlier. But for United, I think, to me, they're, I mean, the current holders of the League Cup in England. But yes, they've spent unwisely also, but not as badly as Chelsea. And we'll see how United does this season. Maybe they'll finish in the top four again.
But to answer that, so much, I know this is a very kind of Americanized critique of European football because we have salary caps and all these kind of mitigating factors in sports outside of baseball. Baseball has a luxury tax, and baseball is competitive, even though they don't have. In fact, baseball, I don't follow the NFL at all, so I don't know, but I understand, from my understanding, baseball is more competitive than the NFL, even though they don't have all these restrictions and even restrictions on marketing that NFL franchises have. In the case of the spending in Europe, you hit a point of diminishing returns, right? If you spend so much money, at some point, it doesn't matter. You're spending that much more, but everybody is spending money. So while I think it affects other leagues, it affects the Bundesliga that Bayern has unlimited resources compared to the rest of the league. It affects La Liga that that the three clubs, although Leti's had to pull back a little bit on their spending, but the three clubs there have more money. Italy, same sort of thing. In England, all the clubs have so much money now, thanks to television, the TV deals, and other things in how that league divides revenue, that I think you've hit a point of diminishing returns where scouting and having a settled squad matters more. So there's a clear system and DNA in how Manchester City and Liverpool play. I know Liverpool slipped a little last season. I think they're going to be back at the top this year. And so they're signing players based on the way they play, their manager, their squad. So even though both those clubs, particularly City, spend a lot of money, their money is probably better spent than the Uniteds and the Chelsea, which are just haphazardly doing things. Same thing with a club like Brighton, who we mentioned before earlier today. Their scouting is superior. They took advantage of the changes in the work permit rules and started scouting Latin America and South America in particular better than anyone else in the league, better than even Manchester City and Liverpool, who I'm mentioning. So that, because they still have a base line amount of money that they're spending, that...
Plus they
have a system, right. A clear system, right. Clear way of playing. Matters more than the $1.1 billion that Chelsea spent. So I think we have to understand in other European leagues, the teams that spend the most are going to win the most. In England, I don't think it's necessarily the case anymore because there's so much money being spent that everybody is spending.
Right, definitely. Good point there, Kartik. So let's wrap it up in terms of listeners. If you do want to share any questions you have or any feedback, we'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to read those out or play those out in future episodes. There's a bunch of different ways you can get in touch with us. One of them is leave a voicemail, and that number is in the US, 561-247-4625. You can send us an email, which is web@worldsoccertalk.com. You can send us a message on Twitter, which is at World Soccer Talk. If you mention it for the podcast, that'll make it easier. And then facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. You can leave a message there. And then last but not least, the website, worldsoccertalk.com. Just click on podcast and then leave a comment in the last episode. And then also youtube.com/worldsoccertalk. Most of our episodes are released there too, and you can go ahead and post a comment there too. Kartik, so I've started reading your book, which is really good, the new one about Florida and the role in American history. What's the name of it, and where can people buy it if they're interested?
Yeah, it's Florida and the American Revolution. It focuses on Florida's role in that conflict, staying loyal to the British. So the reason why Florida has been cut out of the American history narrative is because Florida was a Spanish colony when the 13 colonies to the north were British. And then once Florida became a British colony, it stayed loyal to the crown during the American Revolution, while the 13 colonies to the north of us all fought on the Patriot side, various factions, but just to make it simple. And what's really fascinating about this is in doing the research for the book, I learned so much about how the British interacted with Native Americans and African Americans, free and enslaved African Americans, and learned a lot in terms of not realizing before this that the vast majority of Native Americans and the vast majority of African Americans that took up arms in that conflict fought on the British side, which is kind of complicates our views of history and freedom and all of that stuff. But it's not a book written with a political agenda. I say plenty of positive things about the American Patriots and negative things about the British also, but really focuses on Florida's roles, the battles here, the politics here, why Florida stayed loyal to the British crown. Religion was one of the factors. There were more Catholics in Florida, a higher percentage of Catholics than in the 13 colonies to the north. You can buy it on Amazon, Kindle and paperback. What we're finding with this, Chris, which shocked me, it's the opposite of what I thought. Very few copies on Kindle have sold a ton of paperbacks. So I don't know if that means people are going back to physically reading books rather than ebooks. My preference is kind of back and forth, so I kind of understand it, but that's kind of shocked me. I don't know if that's something that affects what we do on a daily basis, but have sold probably at this point 6 or 7 times as many physical paperback books than ebooks on this particular title.
Yeah, that's great news. That's really good news. And we ran out of time, actually. I was going to talk more about Wrexham and Welcome to Wrexham as far as my experience in the town. I'll probably save that for another episode. We did interview Humphrey Carr, who's the club executive director at Wrexham, really the person responsible for introducing Rob McElhenney to soccer and ultimately to Wrexham. So I'll save that for another
episode.
But
real quickly Go on ahead. This, though, I want to say, Chris, for all those people who complain that we're constantly talking about Wrexham and not about other things, the marketing of this thing is so good and their engagement with media is so good. You've had so much access, you and Kyle, to do interviews around the club. I have gotten better media packets and better media engagement from FX than I do from networks that actually broadcast soccer matches. FX around airing, FX, by the way, is owned by Disney now. It's not owned by Fox anymore. FX around airing this series. So there is also a reason these things matter and how you engage with media. This is just a kind of a hint for other outlets. How you engage with media does affect the perception and how we cover you for better or for worse.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's a great point because, I mean, that media access and having the ability to speak with them helps us tell their story. And as opposed to other organizations or other clubs where it's a lot more restrictive and it feels like you're having to fight just to get the opportunity for any access to be able to tell that story. That's a great point there, Kartik. Both you and I also have PR backgrounds and experience there too. So,
right.
So we can
appreciate it more. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. When it's done right, it's such a huge difference. And then Kartik, before we go, definitely Beyond the 90, what's going on there?
Yeah, a lot of coverage again of lower division soccer. I want to do something deeper on Postecoglou, who we talked about earlier in this show, but again, it would probably require 45 minutes of just talking about the way he inverts the fullbacks and the way Bissouma gets into the attack, and it's just like I haven't found the time to actually just do that, but I want to write something on Spurs this week, and then also a lot of transfer coverage. Now that that's over, we can actually focus on football.
Absolutely. All right, Kartik, well, on behalf of everyone at World Soccer Talk, thank you, listeners, for listening to this show. And then, Kartik, what are you going to do this week and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.
Whether you're driving to work, cycling to a friend's place, or on the way to your next holiday, Amazon Music has your news fix covered. As an Amazon Prime member, you have access to ad-free top podcasts. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.co.uk/onthegonews. That's amazon.co.uk/onthegonews. And listen to your favorite podcasts on the go.